I like beer cause it is good. I drink beer because I should. If there was a song to sing, I sing it and beer you bring. I drink beer when I am sad, cause the beer it makes me glad.
Pause those podcasts. Josh so here with Kevin and Jason.
Beautiful.
Beer is good. Beer is good. It's up. Beer is good. Beer is good. Beer is good. Let's go drink some beer.
Sorry, I had to let that part roll.
That's it. Gotta let it go. Man, that's psycho sick. I don't care what we say the rest of this podcast. This is the best show yet.
Yeah.
Just because we started that way.
Just because of that. Episode 12, best show yet. How's it going, guys?
Slightly better than average.
Slightly better than average? You should be better than that. You just got back from Miami, dude.
Well, I went with toddlers. You know, you're just substituting one type of stressor for another. Yeah, you don't have to clean, you don't have to cook, but then you got to try to keep your kids from being washed out to sea, and so that's just a whole other level of stress. So
got
to
wrangle them in.
It's like they say, when you take a vacation with your kids, it's not a vacation, it's a trip. There's a difference.
Well, I believe that. I believe that. I'm actually slowly starting to get a little bit of an inkling of that whenever I take my young son, he's only 4 months old, but whenever we go anywhere, it's kind of like a total change for him, and it just throws a whole new thing in the rudder, and it's a little bit tough. But guys, we asked a question on 2 weeks ago on our podcast, and like how I said podcast instead of podcast, do you like that?
It's good. I get it. Good. I get it.
We're doing it. All right, so we asked beer additives. So special things, you know, foods and things that go with that are in the beer actual making process. What people like about that. And once again, our loyal listener, Stephen Wilson, just constantly answering.
Thank you, Stephen. You're awesome, buddy.
Yeah.
Keep them coming.
Making us look like we actually have listeners, which is nice. So that's good. But he says that Country Boy slays food beer, which I could actually back up that a little bit. Smoked jalapeno porter, which I've had. I love it. It is really good.
It's good chili beer.
Brown chicken,
absolutely.
Brown cow, chocolate walnut, black gold, and nacho bait.
Yeah.
All solid beers. I really like that. I really like his choice when it comes to the pepper beers. I enjoy a lot of spicy food myself. And Nothing Country Boy, they really do a nice job of really pulling off those pepper beers as much as anyone else. The jalapeno has some of the vegetation, but also has the spice. And that spice is really tempered really nicely with those kind of sweet chocolatey malts they put into that porter. It's fantastic. The nacho bait I like for a slightly opposite reason. They actually take a back seat whenever it comes to the malt. They really let that spicy pepper stand out on its own. So if you're really a big fan of the pepper flavors, you may like that one just a little bit more. It's a little less malt rebuttal, so
that
the pepper stands out better. It will a little bit. I don't know. Every now and then they'll have this taco truck out there, so you eat those tacos and drink that beer. And you sit there and you just simmer in it and slowly, and so it's a really nice little session. Mm-hmm. Me personally, even though I really like a lot of really great food choices, and I really like a lot of spices and stuff. When it comes to beer has such unique beer flavors through the act of fermentation, the kind of malt to go into the hops, and those are ingredients that are a little bit foreign to the culinary art process of making food for most restaurants and bars and people out there. I really like the difference. I really like how they work in conjunction with another in pairing, not necessarily putting one into the other. I seem to like my beer to taste a little bit more like beer. I like my food to taste much more like beer. But I like the way they pair together for the most part. Now, I cook with beer a lot, but whenever it comes to adding stuff to beer, I got to be really careful because it starts to take too much like food. You kind of ruin the game for me a little bit. Now, whenever it comes to like darker beers, you know, they always have the coffee influence or a chocolate influence already. So if you want to accessorate that characteristic with added chocolate or added coffee or something like that, I can get on board. You take it too far, it now tastes too one-dimensional of that fruit or that spice or that chocolate or that coffee, and all of a sudden it becomes too much like the food that I enjoy, and it takes some of the fun away from me a little bit. So that's just a personal touch on my part, but I really like the things that taste separate, but I like to pair them together. Food itself oftentimes will have a hole in its recipe, so the beer can fill that void. And the opposite happens too, where the beer has a certain set of culinary art associated with it, and the food you pair it with can actually fill that void. I don't necessarily need them to be together to pair them together and make that kind of work. So,
I like them all. I like beer that tastes like beer. I like beer that has food in it. I like food that has beer in it. I don't distinguish any of the three, and it just depends on like if I'm drinking and not eating, or if I'm drinking and pairing it with beer. Depends on what it is. And then me and Kevin were talking earlier too about some of the beers that, you know, the additive doesn't really come out, like especially in sours, you know, like Justin Blaybeer, the Evil Twin, it's a sour that has blueberries in it. And you don't really get the blueberry from that as what people know as blueberry. You get that, you know, that sour tinge from the blueberries and, you know, a great name.
Right.
Justin Blaybeer.
But that's where a lot of the Belgian lambics and some of the other fruit beers that are out there, the hinge on the sour side, pull it off particularly well for me is because those bacteria and those yeasts that go into fermentation, they can strip the sweetness away from that fruit and turn it to alcohol, which we're all into, giddy up. But they leave behind the remnants, like the pills and the pits and the kind of skins and things like that of those kind of fruits. And so it leaves a hint of that fruit behind. It doesn't taste necessarily just like the fruit. It just has an echo of that fruit, which I really appreciate and I really enjoy a lot. A lot of times, especially if it's a well-aged sour, sometimes I can tell you it's fruity. I can tell you it's a dark fruit. I can tell you it's a light fruit, but I can't tell you which fruit. And for somebody with a trained palate to be able to come out, okay, this is a game for me. I like that game because it doesn't taste exactly like a strawberry or exactly like a cherry or a blackberry or a plum or an apricot or anything like that. It just has an echo of that kind of fruit. Sometimes it happens in a floral aroma. Sometimes it happens in the aftertaste and the finish. And I really like that game it plays. It keeps me guessing. And it keeps me really unsure about what it is I'm actually tasting. It keeps my mind spinning, and that's where I'm more likely going to celebrate that beer in a greater world.
You mentioned those coffees and chocolates. One of my personal favorites is the Castile Chocolate Quad.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dark Belgian ale. I like it a lot. A lot of people make fun of me for liking it.
No, it's great beer.
But I love it.
You tell me who they are, and I'll beat them up for you, I promise. With the other guy with the
right next to
right.
you.
All right. Me and you, buddy, out in the hallway after the show. All right.
Yeah, that's a great beer. I love
no,
that.
No, it is a really nice beer. And the reason why I like that beer in particular is because the Belgian Quad is so much more strong than those other flavors. Yes, they had coffee. Yes, they had chocolate. But those flavors are nuanced. They're not actually big overtones. You can tell there's something in there, but it doesn't overwhelm that base beer. The base beer still has a little bit of sweetness. It still has a spiciness. It still has some fruitiness that doesn't come from anything else. It's just those yeast esters, and it's a fantastic beer. When you start talking about the fruit, the spice, the effervescence, that wine-like characteristic that beer also displays, some of the steely caramel, slight molasses, then you pile on the chocolate, and you pile on a little bit of the coffee, and all of a sudden everything's in equal parts. You know, there's a part of me that says they become a little muddled, but then they all go in different directions and different parts on the palate, and all of a sudden it starts to sing the symphony of flavors that are actually just kind of erupt at different parts on the tongue, and it becomes this really magical experience. That's one of the most complex and effortless beers in the beer families right now, and I'm couldn't be happier to sell that, represent that one the best I can.
We were talking about sours. They're big on adding different food additives and various things like that. Let's talk about the differences between sours.
Berliner Weiss, Goza, you've got wild ales. I worked a lot with the wild ales. Those are ones that are fermented from wild yeast. Those tend to be very fruity, very, you know, great pairing beers with food. A lot of Belgian traditionalists love those beers.
Yeah, the thing about it was is they were making beer a long time before the microscope came around. Until that happened, we had no way to really control fermentation, so we didn't really know what was in beer to make it taste a certain way or make it ferment a certain way. So prior to that, we're just letting whatever is kind of flying through the air fall in there, or we learned how to kind of corral them a little bit by the use of certain oak fats or certain with certain sticks and things like that. They transferred yeast or bacteria from one vessel to another. But there would be multiple organisms. That's a different show, guys. Tune in tonight at midnight for that one.
A quick little aside.
Same thing. We're talking about beer. Right?
Who was not absolutely just trembling when they read that word organism in seventh grade science class?
Because your mind went there.
You were like, I'm going to say orgasm. I'm going to say orgasm. All right, continue. Sorry.
Yeah, read chapter 7 aloud. So, yeah, it becomes tricky. But no, those organisms really allow for that fermentation characteristic to really take place. And it's sour and it's earthy and it's this and that. But that was happening 700-800 years ago in Belgium. When you're in northern Germany, they basically used wheat because wheat grew real prevalently in those areas. And so when they used that wheat, they were also using the lactobacillus, which is a bacteria that lives naturally on the outside of that wheat. And whenever you brew with that stuff, that lactobacillus transfers over, starts eating those sugars and those proteins inside that wheat germ, and it starts to create those sour flavors we enjoy. So we've kind of learned that there's a whole host of organisms, including bacteria and yeast, that really work in tandem to create those sour flavors, and they range a huge spectrum. if you're in Brussels, you like the earthy characteristics, the things that are slightly barnyardy, the things that kind of remind you of those cave-ripened cheeses of France and some of those kind of aromas come on. You know, the stuff that like smells like feet, you know, but tastes so good. You know, beer sometimes can do that, too. It's a fermented product, and so it can have some of those characteristics, too, where it smells very pungent, very earthy, sense of the barnyard, saddle leather, horse hair, even though all those kind of things come on. But also has a cidery, briny characteristic that's actually quite nice. It just has chock full, so much characteristic. Now, whenever America's gotten, you know, hold of some of those flavors, some of those things from Brussels, those take 3 and 4 years to ferment, fully develop, to make them really, really characterful. However, we kind of learned if we just stick to the lactobacillus like those northern Germans did, that's a fast-acting organism, not orgasm, organism. Most orgasms are fast-acting, too, if you notice. But, you know, those organisms... and you're done. But those organisms work very, very fast.
Good
they ferment them very
on
quickly. We've not made it past episode number two. But it's those very clean lactic acids that organism creates. It gives these beers a really clean sourness, which is like your Berliner Weiss, your Gose's. And they also void of a lot of that kind of earthiness a lot of people are a little bit averse to anymore. So that's the reason why we're seeing so many sours on the beer landscape right now.
I think also it's a different flavor that people are really starting to enjoy, especially in the summer. I mean, it's just a refreshing, you know.
Dry, crisp, clean, pleasantly acidic. If you like lemonades, this is just an adult version. Oh, by the way, it's got alcohol into it.
And Radlers. I love Radlers. The Stiegel Grapefruit Radler, the Boulevard Ginger Lemon Radler. Radlers, I think, are very refreshing in the summertime.
We're seeing more
usually
of those than ever.
Very low ABV, but... You know, still, they're very good.
Yep. If you're going to be drinking all day, you got to start with something light.
Let's talk about beer snobs.
Okay. Well, so, I don't want to be self-deprecating.
No,
here,
I've talked about this with friends recently. And the whole thing is, it's like, if you are, you can either be a beer snob or you can be a beer lover. You cannot be both, I don't think. Because the thing is, I'm in this industry and I talk to some people who are real beer snobs. And I don't give that title to very many people, because the thing is, it's not just about being choosy on what kind of beer that you drink. It is insulting other people's opinions of what they think is good or what they think is relevant.
Crossing that line.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing is, if you walk in, and just because we don't have the newest Dark Lord, which doesn't even get released here, and it doesn't interest you to come and drink a beer at this
undrinkable
bar, then guess what? Good riddance. I don't want you here anyway.
Yeah. The thing about it is, we've divided this craft beer segment up into so many different fiefdoms. There's passive craft beer fans. There's people who really don't know anything about it, but they know there's something on the market other than a Bud and a Miller and a Coors. They're happy to get into those when it's available. Then you have people on the other end of the spectrum, which they create a hobby out of this. They take it more serious than most people in the profession even do. And so you get everybody in between. The way I read it, it's all based on passion. And anywhere you want to take that passion, I'll welcome. However, it does mean they have to deal a little bit more patience with some people if they come in being a little bit more of a know-it-all than being a connoisseur. There's a big difference between that. And so there's certain sectors of the craft beer community who, if it's not on the top 100 beer list in Beer Advocate, they'd rather not drink it. And that's just an elitist group that if you like that kind of stuff, then you're not going to find much help anywhere at a local place.
Yeah.
You're going to find the help like on the eBays and the Craigslist and stuff like that, which is a little bit shady. And no one recommends that they go there, kind of by that thing. But if you do that, then you're missing out on a whole breadth of flavors. They're actually really, really good. A lot of breweries across the nation are putting out every day. They're successful at every beer bar in America. They're actually very, very good. So one of the things I always tell people, too, is like, if you're making a beer, you want to know what the most important ingredient you can put into a beer is rarity. If you make it rare, you create hype. And if you create hype, then people want to talk about it. It doesn't even have to be all that good. If there's just hype circulating around it, or if it's rarity built into it, then people, they stumble all over themselves to try to find this thing. And even though I try not to criticize that too much, I don't want it to become the bulk of the beer community, because that's just a level of I guess, panic-stricken beer drinkers that I just don't want to have to deal with on a regular basis. Yeah. And you're ignoring a whole lot of things that are available all the time, every day, that's very worth their money, very worth their time, very worth their attention.
Then you start reaching for things like bull testicles and stuff like that, right?
And whale blubber, yeah. And all of a sudden, you get yourself in a world of hurt. That's,
you know,
right.
I love really good craft beer, rare beer, whatever you want. But I'll take that loose Busch Light out of a Kroger bag that somebody's got in a pinch out at a tailgate or whatever, too. I'm not that snob that's going to sit there and say that I'm better than that, because any beer is better than no beer.
Well, a guy not too long ago, he said, so when's the last time you had like a swill beer? And I said, well, it was about 2 years ago. And I said, I sit down and I actually had a Black Label. And he kind of snuffed at it a little bit. And I said, actually, I kind of enjoyed the beer. And he's like, you enjoyed a Black Label? I said, well, I did it for reasons that I didn't have anything to do with the beer. I went to my dad's house. My dad, he didn't like better beer at all. And so he wanted to sit down here. He wanted to have a beer with his son. So I sit down there, had a beer with him, rather enjoyed it. My dad died about a year later. And so whenever I look back at that, to Black Label, it might be one of the best beers I've ever had.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to be about the flavor of beer that matters. It could be about the camaraderie. It could be about the moment. It could be about something else that the beer has brought us to that makes us enjoy it even more. It
goes back to what you were saying in episode 11 about it just being a fire. Everybody comes around it, drinks, and has a good time, and, you know, shares themselves, and it becomes the memories that happen around the fire rather than the fire and the warmth itself.
Absolutely.
So, guys, we've kind of reached the end of episode 12. We are doing pretty good here. I'm pretty excited about this. Let's see where this takes us.
2-hour shows. I can see it in our future.
2-hour shows. Oh. I don't think we would make it to the end of a 2-hour show with how much we drink. I mean,
hiccup.
Yeah. Speaking of which, this is Deschutes Fresh Squeezed IPA. It's a
Pint
good
Night's
IPA.
Fantastic. Yes, it is. Very nice.
I'm really glad that they had that for Pint Night here at Pazzo's. If you guys want to come and join us for the next Pint Night, we will be here in 2 weeks. So, guys, come on down. You can ask us questions. I'm going to bring the wireless mic. We're going to open it up. Let people take swings at us.
Let's do it. We can handle it.
Roll with the punches. Here it is, Pazzo's Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Josh. He's Kevin. He's Jason. And we are Pazzo's Podcast. Thank you. You had to hide away for so long.